On behalf of my colleague, Dr. Syed Zatar, it is my pleasure to welcome you all to the teleclass, Outcome Surveillance and Process Surveillance. Our speaker today is Dr. Victor Rosenthal. Now, you don't have to scratch the surface of infection control too much before you come across Dr. Rosenthal. He lives in Argentina, although today he joins us from a hotel room in Brazil. And if you heard our earlier conversation, he has speaking engagements at approximately 200 conferences every year, so it's no wonder that he's in a hotel today. Dr. Rosenthal is the Director of Infectious Disease, Infection Control, and Hospital Epidemiology Departments at two Argentine hospitals. He is a professor at Valparaiso University in Chile and was a visiting professor at the University of Wisconsin in the U.S. Our distinguished speaker is also an editorial board member and reviewer for the American Journal of Infection Control, the International Journal of Infection Control, the Annals of Clinical Microbiology and Antimicrobials in Turkey, and Infectio in Colombia. He works with ICHI and the CDC and the World Health Organization. He is popular worldwide. Dr. Rosenthal is also the director and coordinator of the International Nosocomial Infection Control Consortium, a remarkable organization about which you will learn in just a few moments. And if all of that wasn't enough, Victor Rosenthal also heads up the Weber Training Spanish Language Teleclass Series. It is indeed an honor to have Dr. Rosenthal with us today, and so to present the teleclass, Outcome Surveillance and Process Surveillance from Buenos Aires, Argentina. I am delighted to present Dr. Victor Rosenthal. Victor.
Hello, Paul. Thank you for your kind introduction. Good day to everyone. I cannot say good day or good afternoon because I don't know where you are and every place is different moment. I would like to introduce you the INIC activity, the International Nosocomial Infection Control Consortium activity, which is mainly outcome and process surveillance. Going to the next slide, to the second slide, you see that there are three organizations working worldwide in infection control. One is the WHO with the program Clean Care is Safer Care. Other one is the IFIC, the International Federation of Infection Control. Another one is INIC, the International Nosocomial Infection Control Consortium. You are very well aware about the WHO program, about hygiene and other stuff. The IFIC is one organization umbrella who is joining all the infection control societies worldwide. There are 67 infection control organizations by now, and the role of IFIC is joining them, helping them to create new organizations in those countries without an organization already established, organizing scientific meetings every year, and editing guidelines to be applicable mainly in developing countries. INIC is endorsed by IFIC. We are like part of IFIC since 2005. We were born before, we were born in 1998, but in 2005 we joined IFIC. We belong to them. We belong to them as a research organization of IFIC. The next slide, you see some background of the INIC program. The INIC is a non-profit, open, multi-center, international collaborative program following the definitions and methodology of NIST. You know, now the new NIST name is NHSN. It's the first international research network. We were born in 1998 in Argentina with the idea of trained healthcare workers in conducting outcome and process surveillance. Next slide. We employ a multi-approach strategy combining different interventions. Outcome surveillance, which I will explain later, process surveillance, which I will explain later too, performance feedback, targeted interventions guided by risk factor analysis, cost-effective interventions guided by cost analysis, tutorial for surveillance, training in infection control guidelines application, administrative support in uploading data and developing the charts and the tables needed for managing the infection control activity, scientific data analysis and interpretation to guide actions, sharing data at scientific meetings, APIC, SHEI, IFIC, ICAC, and peer-reviewed journals like American Journal of Infection Control, EG, Critical Care Medicine, Journal of Hospital Infections, and others, and cooperating with hospitals and different organizations worldwide, because we have been supporting the government of Mexico, Colombia. We also support the WHO by reviewing the guidelines, and so on. Next slide. Hospitals receive our protocol, research protocol. They review the protocol with the research committee and agree to participate by signing and sending us a paper with the signature. After that, we send to the hospitals the forms and the manual to be filled, and they fill the forms, they send to our headquarters in Buenos Aires, we upload the data, and every month we send the reports to them. We have also available people to answer questions 7 days, 24 hours per day. The form and software are designed to record data from patients with infection and without infection. And this is the main difference we have with the NIS system and HSN system. Because with the NIS system, in one paper, you collect the data of the ICU in general, I mean the CVC days, MV days, Foley catheter days, bed days. And when you have one patient with infection, you fill another form only with the data of the patient with the infection. But with INIC, it's different, because we fill forms with all the data for patients with infection and without infection. I mean, we collect the name, medical record, age, gender, underlying disease, severity and score of all the patients with and without infection, and also on a daily basis information regarding temperature, blood pressure, device days, cultures, clinical pneumonia, antibiotic use, and the characteristic of the infection in the case of a patient with infection. And by outcome surveillance, of course, because of that, we can analyze case control nested studies on this cohort, because we have all the data from cases and from controls. Also, we conduct process surveillance and performance feedback, mainly for hygiene compliance, vascular care compliance, catheter care compliance, Foley catheter care compliance, and mechanical ventilator care compliance. As I mentioned at the beginning, in 2005, we joined IFIC, and now we are working together because we have the same mission and vision. If you go to the next slide, the slide with the IFIC webpage, you see that they introduce our group on the IFIC webpage, telling to the people that we were born in 1998 and we have the same mission and vision, IFIC and INIC, and for this one we are working together. And they invite the people to go to the webpage of INIC to participate with INIC. Going to the next slide, you see the webpage of INIC. And on the webpage of INIC, you see our vision and our mission. Our vision is very clear. We would like to have at every healthcare facility worldwide the rate of infections using standard universal definitions like the NIS definitions, and that they reach the lowest international level due to the improvement of infection control interventions based on evidence-based medicine. And our mission is to create a global network in order to standardize surveillance definitions and methodologies and conduct infection control scientific research using the same methodology, the same definitions. To train healthcare workers in order to improve their skill for surveillance and research activities. design and coordinate research studies in order to analyze the clinical and cost-effectiveness impact of interventions, old and new, to stimulate, support, guide, and advise on research projects, to provide tools to conduct outcome and process surveillance in order to measure the infections, the consequence, and the healthcare worker practice, to conduct scientific evidence-based knowledge as to diagnosis, surveillance, prevention, and control everywhere, and so on. Going to the next slide, you see that our structure has three parts, one chairman, one director's board, and one advisory board. The director board is also called country coordinators. These people are key people in infection control in different countries that are participating with AINI, like Dr. Moreno, who is the president of the ID Society in Colombia, Dr. Cuellar, the president of the ID Society of Peru, Dr. Hu, part of the board of the Infection Control Society of China, the next slide, Dr. Lebele Bigchoglu with the same role in Turkey, Dr. Medeiros with the same role in Brazil, Ajita Mehta in India, Dr. Metar in South Africa, and Dr. Toshihiro Mitsuda in Japan. On the other hand, we have the advisory board. Next slide. The advisory board are representatives of key organizations working in infection control coming from developed countries, like US, like countries of Europe, like Australia. And you will see some familiar faces like Carla Alvarado, Martin Favero, Gary French, Nick Graves, Bill Jarvis, next slide, Elaine Larson, Pat Lynch, Dennis Mackey, Russell Olmsted, Didier Pitet, and Wing Hong Sito. All them are members, key members of APIC, SHE, WHO, APSIC, American Journal of Infection Control, Infection Control Hospital Epidemiology, Journal of Hospital Infection, Hospital Infection Society, and so on. IFIC also. Going to the next slide, you see one map of the world with 14 flags. These 14 flags represent the countries that are participating with data and sending data to AINIC headquarters. These 14 countries are already published data with us, and if you go to the next slide, you see that there are other 13 countries that already signed, but they are collecting data and they didn't send the data to us yet. As a conclusion, we have working with AINIC by now 27 countries. The goal of AINIC is to enroll at least 5 countries from Latin America, 5 countries from Africa, 5 from Asia, and 5 from Europe. Why 5? Because we understood that by choosing 5 countries per continent, we may leverage and influence the other countries surrounding these 5 countries, as happened in many opportunities in Latin America in our experience. And from each country, we would like to have at least 5 cities. I mean that if we have 5 countries per continent, in 4 continents, we have 20 countries. And if we have 5 cities per country, we would like to have 100 cities. By now, we have 27 countries, more than we expected. We don't reject any country, we don't reject any hospital, we don't reject any city. We have the goal of having these 100 cities from 20 countries, but it's not what is happening. We are having more. We have by now around 80 cities from 27 countries. We have less than 5 cities per country by now. We use as a benchmark in the next page the rate of NHSN. As you know, CDC published last 2 months ago the new report, and they changed the name from NIST to NHSN, And we saw that the rate of BSI now in average is 2 per 1,000 CBC days. The rate of UTI is around 3 per 1,000 folic acid days. And the rate of pneumonia is around 3 per 1,000 mechanical ventilator days. In the next slide, some clarification about outcome surveillance is the measurement of the rates and consequence of healthcare-associated infections, including but not limited to the following few variables: infection rates, mortality rates, extra length of stay, attributable cost, bacterial profile, bacterial resistance. In developed countries, the outcome surveillance is the base to build the infection control programs. Next slide. Outcome surveillance allows evaluation of the cost effectiveness of specific infection control interventions. It is also used to analyze case control studies in order to establish risk factors, match patients, to find extra costs and mortality. In summary, outcome surveillance is often the infrastructure for management the hospital healthcare-associated infections. Outcome surveillance of device-associated infections has become an integral feature of infection control and quality assurance in the developed countries. And these standards have been adopted in US, UK, Australia, Canada, Germany, among other countries. Next slide. These developed countries report the rate of infection as infection per 1,000 device days. But developing countries more frequently have been reporting percentage. Next slide. Risk for infection is higher among seriously ill patients who often have several indwelling devices. For this reason, we have to focus on the ICUs. If the device days is unknown, it's not possible to compare rates between facilities. For this reason, it's important to use this methodology. I mean, measuring the infection by device days. Sometimes developing countries report the infection per 1,000 patient days or bed days. But again, it's not easy to compare facilities using this denominator. But fortunately, recently, some developing countries has been reporting and publishing rates per 1,000 device days, which is useful to compare with the other international standards coming from developed countries like US and Germany, for example. Next slide. Heinick also reported mortality rate from several participant hospitals. Next slide. In this slide, you see four papers coming from four different countries, from Mexico, from Argentina, from Turkey, and from Colombia. And in the next slide, you see one paper published last year in October 2006 in Annals of Internal Medicine, joining data from 8 countries, 55 ICUs. In the next slide, you see one chart showing different columns with different numbers, and at the end, the overall rate of BSI per 1,000 CBC days. You see that the overall rate is 11, and in the NHSN system is around 2, meaning that the rate in developing countries is around 5 or 6 times above the standard. In the next slide, you see the UTI rate, which is 7 for INIC, and it's around 2 for NHSN, meaning that the rate in developing countries in INIC is around 3 times above US. In the next slide, you see the rate of pneumonia, VAP, and the rate is 21, and in US is around 4, meaning that it's around 7 times, 6-7 times above US, the rate of INIC. In the next slide, you see one page of one book that is in edition process now. We had the chance with Pat Lynch, Michael Borg, and Sergey Eremin, all the members of IFIC and myself, member of INIC, to edit the chapter of infection control in developing countries for this book. This book is the book of Bennett and Brachman that will be available, I believe, later this year. And as you see on this, if you can see because it's very small, we found different publications from different developing countries showing that the rate of BSI per 1,000 CBC days is very high, even if it's not measured by INIC. Everyone, researcher worldwide, who is publishing using this type of rate, found that the rate is many times above US, about NHSM, ranging from 8 to 30 per 1,000 CBC days. In the next slide, you see one table of our paper published in Annals in October 2006, showing the bacterial profile and the bacterial resistance. Next slide, you see benchmarking comparing NIS and INIC, and you see that the rate of MRSA is 60% in NIS and 84% in INIC. The ceftriaxone resistant Enterobacteriaceae is 20% in NIS and is 55% in INIC. Ciprofloxacin resistant Pseudomonas is 30% in NIS and 60% in INIC. And the opposite, vancomycin resistant Enterococcus is higher in NIS than in INIC because it's 30 against 5. The next slide. As you see, the rates of infection in developing countries is far higher than the rates of NHSN. For the case of BSI, UTI, and VAP, between 3 to 7 times above NHSN. Next slide. There are a number of explanations for the higher rates of infections in developing countries. Some of them. Most developing countries don't have mandatory laws for infection control programs, and also accreditation is not mandatory. Hand hygiene is variable. There are very limited funds and resources for infection control, and nurse-to-patient staffing ratio are lower than in most developed countries. Use of outdated technology is also a factor. Next slide. In developing countries, even with different healthcare systems, generally the perception is that the rates of infection are low. If you go to one developing country, it's frequently that you if you ask to the people how are the rates here, and they say, we have a low rate. Our rate is around 3%, 4%. And they didn't measure, but they say it's 3 or 4%. I had this experience many times. Many times I had the opposite. But frequently, they say that the rate is low, even not measuring. On the other hand, if you ask about the hand hygiene, frequently you hear that they say, our hand hygiene is 100%. But they didn't measure. Next slide. Outcome surveillance also allow measuring length of stay, mortality, and cost. In the next slide, you see one publication from Argentina, from INIC. And in the next slide, you see one chart showing the length of stay of patients without infection, which is 5 days, and the length of stay of patient with one infection, BSI or VAP or UTI, and it's around 15 days, showing a difference of 10 extra days. And in the last columns, you see a patient with more than one infection, and the length of stay is around 25 or 30%. Next slide. The mortality of patients without infection is 17%. The mortality of patients with BSI is 34%. 2 times above the mortality of patients without infection, significantly. And the mortality of patients with VAP is around 46%, around 3 times above the mortality of patients without infection. Next slide. We also have been analyzing the extra cost. By following the methodology recommended by Halley in the Bennett and Brahman book, next slide, you see one flag of Argentina in the right upper corner. And in this slide, you see case patients and control patients, 142 cases and 142 controls. We collected data of these patients during 5 years. And as I said before, we followed the Bob Halley methodology. I mean, matching cases and controls with the same, exactly the same features. At least 7 days of length of stay, the same age, the same gender, the same type of ICU, the same severity and score, and the same year. After matching them, but with only the difference of having or not having one healthcare-related infection, next slide, we found that the length of stay of patients with BSI was 23 days. The controls without the BSI, but with the same features, the same age, gender, and so on, was 11 days. The extra length of stay was 12 days. The cost of patients with BSI was $8,000, and the cost of the controls, $3,000. The extra cost, I mean the difference, was $5,000. The mortality for patients with infection was 54 with BSI, and the controls with the same features but without the BSI was 30%. The extra cost, sorry, the extra mortality was 25%. In the next slide, you see a similar study, but from Mexico. The extra length of stay was 6 days, and the extra cost was around $12,000. In the next slide, you see a very similar study, but from Brazil. The extra length of stay was 24 days, and the extra cost was $8,000. I mean that the cost of the BSI coming from the south to the north of Latin America is $5,000 in Argentina, $8,000 in Brazil, and $12,000 in Mexico. And the length of stay is between 6 to 24 extra days. And the mortality is around 25%, the extra mortality. In the next slide, you see a similar study, but for pneumonia. We match 300 patients with pneumonia and 300 controls with the same features, the same age, gender, underlying disease, and so on. The next slide, and we found that the extra length of stay was 9 days, and the extra cost was $2,000, and the extra mortality was 30%. As a conclusion, in these participant developing countries working with INIC, we could find the rate of infections per 1,000 device days, the bacterial profile, the bacterial resistance, the extra length of stay, the extra mortality, and the extra cost. And having this, we are ready to understand what happened there, and it's of course time to implement measures to reduce these infections and consequences. Process surveillance is one of the best ways to reduce the infections and the consequences. In the next slide, you see that the process surveillance is the standardized collection of data regarding infection control practice actually used in the facility. We mean measuring what the people is doing, measuring what the healthcare worker is doing. Include hand hygiene compliance, vascular catheter care compliance, Foley catheter care compliance, and prevention of BAP guidelines compliance. Next slide. Process surveillance is done by observation of actual practice, analysis of the data, and after performance feedback to the healthcare worker who perform the care of the patient. Hand hygiene is the most important aspect. Several studies reported a reduction on infection when compliance with hand hygiene was improved. Next slide. But anyway, the hand hygiene rate is not 100% in any place. It's around 20 to 70% in developed and in developing countries. Several interventions try to improve hand hygiene practice. The best interventions are, according to the publications, education, process surveillance, and performance feedback. Dubert found that with education alone, you can improve for a short period of time the hand hygiene compliance. But if you add performance feedback, you have longer result of compliance. In developing countries, with education, process surveillance, performance feedback, we increase the hand hygiene compliance. Next slide. You see in the next slide pictures of ICUs from developing countries. You see the one of the right has believe me, 42 beds, and no one sink. Zero sinks, 42 beds, and no one hand rub, no one alcohol gel in any place. No way to wash the hands, no way to do hand hygiene. It's impossible in this ICU. In the next slide, you see pictures of sinks with common soap and cloth, wet, dirty towels, instead of antiseptic soap and paper towels. In these ICUs, it's impossible to do a proper hand hygiene or a proper hand washing. In the next slide, you see some improvements in some ICUs of INIC, one sink every 2 beds, availability of hand rub, alcohol, and availability of chlorhexidine, paper towels, and a good technique. In the next slide, in Argentina between 1999 and 2003, we found at one ICU 15,000 opportunities for hand hygiene, and the hand hygiene at the beginning was around 20%, and after intervention, around 60%. In the next slide, you see the cover of the publication. And in the next slide, you see that we reproduced during the last 10 years in 10 countries in 50 ICUs exactly the same methodology. And in average, we increased the hand hygiene from a baseline of 35% to hand hygiene compliance of 65%. We increased significantly from 35 to 65% in 50 hospitals of 10 countries in 10 years. Of course, the baseline measurement was only in average 3 months. I mean 10 years because during 10 years we have been incorporating more and more hospitals. But always, the baseline measurement is in average 3 months, and the intervention phase is between 3 months to 9 years and 9 months, as in this example. We increased the hand hygiene in hospitals of Argentina, next slide, Brazil, Colombia, Mexico, next slide, Peru, El Salvador, next slide, Philippines, India, Pakistan, Turkey, and next slide, more hospitals of Turkey. Now we have in edition process this paper with Professor Didier Pitet, and we didn't submit yet this paper. In the next slide, obviously after hand hygiene improvement, we also need to improve other infection control guidelines. Next slide. In Argentina, by improving hand hygiene compliance, we could reduce the healthcare-associated infection rates, 42% relative reduction. Next slide is the first study showing reduction of infections by improving hand hygiene in Latin America. Next slide, you see the cover of this paper, and in the next slide, you see examples of this paper and other hospitals where we had the same result, not the same, but similar result, I mean reduction of infections by improving hand hygiene. Every one of these lines of this table is one research published, or in a journal, or in a scientific meeting. In Argentina, we reduced the infections, I mean globally, adding BSI plus pneumonia plus UTI per 1,000 bed days from 48 to 28 per 1,000 bed days. In Brazil, from 20% to 5%. In Colombia, from 21% to 6%. In India, from 2 to 0.2%. It's in the next slide, no? In India, from 12 to 5%. In other hospitals of India, from 16 to 5 per 1,000 bed days. In Mexico, from 13 to 5%. In Turkey, from 30 to 20 per 1,000 bed days. Also in Turkey, in our city, from 55 to 35%. In our city, in other hospital, in fact, not in our city, from 42 to 25 per 1,000 bed days. In other city, from 55 to 19. And also, we are very happy because we could reduce the mortality, as you see in the next slide. In Mexico, we reduced the mortality in one ICU from 50% to 30%. In Peru, from 30 to 15%, and in India from 2 to 0.5. Next slide. The incidence of CVC, SVT-BSI, UTI, and VIB, it was reduced by outbound surveillance and process surveillance. As you see in the next slide, specifically for the case of Foley catheter, we pay attention in the next slide, the position of the bag and the position of the Foley catheter. The bag hanging in and not above the bed, and the Foley catheter above the leg and not below the bag. In the next slide, you see the cover of the paper, and in the next slide, you see pictures of the bag hanging and the bag on the bed, the wrong and the good situation. And on the next slide, you see the catheter below the leg and above the leg, the wrong and the good position. And two examples, one from Argentina, one from India, reducing the UTI rate from 20 to 12 per 1,000 Foley catheter days, and from 7 to 2. In the next slide, some explanation about how we improve the infection control guidelines compliance to reduce the VAB. In the next slide, the cover of one of our papers, and on the next slide, examples of VAB rate reduction from Argentina, Colombia, India, and Turkey. From 50 to 30, from 12 to 4, from 22 to 6, from 26 to 10, and from 20 to 8 per 1,000 MV days. In the next slide, process surveillance for improving the infection control guidelines to reduce the BSIs. In the next slide, you see the covers of some of our papers. In the next slide, you see pictures, one with the wrong insertion procedure for CVC, and good insertion procedure. In the next slide, you see four groups of pictures. In the upper left, you see wrong peripheral catheter site care, left corner down, good peripheral catheter care, upper right, bad insertion, bad care of central catheter, and down to the right, good care of central catheter. Also, you see in the next slide, one-use vials used multiple times. You see also vials multi-dose with a needle, and you see also infusion system with administration set with stopcock. All this practice we try to eliminate. And after eliminating all them, but mainly focusing on some aspects like hand hygiene compliance, presence of gauze or transparent dressing, good condition of the gauze, and proper insertion, we could reduce the rates of BSI in several countries. In Argentina, all of them were measured by 1,000 CVC days. In Argentina, from 46 to 11, in Brazil, from 14 to 7, in Colombia, from 55 to 6, in India, from 12 to 5, in Mexico, from 46 to 20. All these were published, and you can see the reference below the table. Also in Mexico, from 40 to 10, in Morocco, Africa, from 22 to 8, in Turkey, Istanbul, from 10 to 2, in Turkey, Samsung, from 30 to 13. Conclusions. In developing countries, this is the next slide, the rates of infections are at least 3 to 5 times higher than international standards. And I mean international standards, the rates of US, the rates of Germany, the rates of Canada, Australia, UK. The health-related infections increase the length of stay at least 10 days. They cost $5,000 to $12,000 by now measured in Latin America, and the mortality 2 times for BSI and 3 times for VAB. By applying process surveillance plus education and performance feedback, we increase the compliance with the infection control guidelines. And by applying outcome plus process surveillance plus feedback, we reduce the mortality, the overall rate of infections, the device-associated infections. every one hospital of the world is kindly invited to incorporate into INIC project. I mean, we are able to send the protocol to every one hospital, to send the commitment letter, to receive the signed commitment letter, to send the forms, to send the manual, to train them, to receive the forms every month, to upload the data, to analyze the data every month, to send a report every month, to analyze the trends every month to detect improvement of compliance with guidelines, I mean processor guidelines, and to reduce, to detect the reduction of the infection and consequence, I mean outcome surveillance. And we also are able to edit a draft for submission to meetings and for submission to papers and to publish together with the people from the participant hospitals. If anyone is willing to participate, you have there on the slide number 90, our webpage, my email. If you send me your name, email, and hospital name and city, we will send you the protocol. In the next slide, you see, thank you very much for your attention. I apologize for my accent. It's not the best English you usually hear, but it's what I can. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Rosenthal. Your accent is wonderful, and we understand you very clearly, and thank you for presenting this material today. You've seen some remarkable improvements in HAIs and hand hygiene, that sort of thing, in the countries and the hospitals you've been tracking. I'm wondering how much of that is attributable to the new availability of facilities, that is to say the sinks being put in, that sort of thing. How much of that maybe is education where there hasn't been education before?
You asked how the availability of sinks impact the hand hygiene and how the education. The slide I put for sinks with showing the new sinks is a very, very old slide from my hospital in Argentina in 1998. After the decennial meeting in U.S. recommending the hand hygiene with alcohol hand rub, I stopped recommending installing new sinks, and I started recommending using hand hygiene with alcohol hand rub. And most of the improvements were related with the education, process surveillance, performance feedback, and availability of alcohol hand rub.
Your surveys, do they have a start and a stop time where perhaps the improvement in behavior, that is perhaps hand washing behavior, is good during the length of time where people know that they're being surveyed? This is very common in North America, that while we do a survey and people know we're doing a survey, their behavior improves. And then when the survey is over, the behavior slides back, perhaps all the way to where it used to be.
Okay, I understand. Yes, I agree with you. For the reason we never stop. We don't conduct survey in different moments of the year. We conduct survey 3 times per week without any stop, continuously. And they know we are watching them, but they don't know when. We pretend we are doing other activity, but not watching them. But they know we are watching them. But again, they don't know when.
Thank you again for joining us today. A special thanks to Victor Rosenthal for what was very interesting and encouraging, actually. Thank you for that.
Okay, thank you so very much. It was an honor presenting this class in your group, with your group. And thank you very much for all the attendance. And I am available for any question. You can contact me through my webpage or through my email. If you go to my webpage, I receive the emails coming from the webpage, and I will personally answer your question. Thank you so very much.
Well, thank you very much. Folks, I look forward to talking to you again very soon, and until then, goodbye.